This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Living with schizophrenia isn't easy, especially when you're not getting relief from some of your symptoms. It can be hard when you're still dealing with symptoms, like hearing voices or seeing things that aren't there. And negative symptoms, like feeling unmotivated or avoiding social situations. If this sounds familiar, it might be time to talk to your healthcare provider and explore a different kind of schizophrenia treatment. Discover your possibilities at treatingscz.com.
Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action right now. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. The President of the United States speaking with the UK Prime Minister, taking questions about everything. I know it kind of freaks out other leaders. They want to be in and out, and they only want to take certain topics. But I hope they're used to the president by now. He's not afraid of any topic, repeating any story, and everything's on the table. We're going to talk to, for a first time, Samir Kapadia. He is a founder CEO of the India Index and also a partner at the Vogel Group. I want to get a perspective on these trade deals. I want to get a perspective on an India deal that could be happening. And also, the markets are going through the roof early on. We're over 45,000 after the trade deal that was cut over the weekend. We're also following the other breaking news that's taking place because the trade team is in action. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, the State Department just text messaged me that they are now on the ground trying to broker a deal with Cambodia and Laos. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The images are disturbing and heartbreaking. We all want a peace there in that region. President Trump is trying to forge that, and we support it 100%.
That is the Speaker of the House. Decision time in Gaza as innocents suffer. But let's be clear, Hamas is to blame. The world wants a resolve to this. With the talks broken off, IDF has to go for a complete victory. I'll explain.
Number two.
For a four-year period of time, the truth about the origins of the Russia collusion hoax was hidden from the American people. Those same people were already at that point in time onto their next hoax, the Hunter Biden laptop.
Russia hoax rumbles forward with more revelations and intriguing posts from Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino. We're going to let you know what's new and why all the Obama intel team should be worried.
Number one.
We have a deal. We have a trade deal between the two largest economies in the world. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will bring stability.
The president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, the biggest yet. Just days after pulling off a mammoth trade deal with Japan, the EU comes in with one bigger as the worries on tariffs dissipates. Should we anticipate more success when the Trump team meets with China in Stockholm today? And that's where we'll end. I mean, it just, to me, it's really exciting. Because, you know, I am not a world economist. Maybe you aren't either. And I'm amazed. I come from a sports background, and I always thought it was pretty intriguing that all these so-called sports experts were wrong so often and were so sure they were right. Especially, I did sports radio for a while, too. Every sports radio host knows exactly what their team is doing wrong, what the Dolphins are doing right, you know, what the Bruins are doing, and what with the guys. Economists, I put them in the same category. They have more schooling, but they are wrong more than they are right. And again, in April, they were saying Trump doesn't know what he's doing. Tariffs are a tax. The world is going to retaliate. This is going to be a world global war. It's going to make China more powerful. People will run to China in certainty. The world hates the economic world and the stock market and all these investors. Venture capital, hate uncertainty. What did President Trump do? Uncertainty. Okay. Where are the trade deals? 90 days and 90 days. Where are the trade deals? Not yet. I'm going to wait. President had a few deadlines, pushed them back. Now it's August 1st. All of a sudden, the first one comes in with the UK. Then the second one comes in with Indonesia. Then Vietnam, maybe in different order. Then Philippines. Then in comes Japan. Titanic changes, great opportunities, huge deposits into our, basically to our country, a guarantee to invest $550 billion. And then yesterday it comes down. The EU, this president of the EU, remember how dismissive they were of President Trump in the first term. And they were told by John Kerry and others, he's going to get impeached. Don't worry about it. He doesn't know what he's doing. He has disdain for Europe. How dare he? Okay. Well, Ursula von der Leyen, in her second term, seems to have hit it off with Trump, who she wasn't in her first term. Same with Trump. They got a deal. She flew to Scotland to his golf club to iron out the framework. Cut one.
We have a deal. We have a trade deal between the two largest economies in the world. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will bring stability. It will bring predictability. That's very important for our businesses on both sides of the Atlantic. It's 15% tariffs across the board, all inclusive. The investments Mr. President just described that are going to go to the United States and the purchases over there. Indeed, basically, the European market is open.
And they have a 27, you know, there's 27 countries, right? They'll agree to purchase $750 billion of American energy. Why is that important? It's a win for both. They need to get it, but they could go other places. And he said, no, get it from us. And there's a pipeline Larry Kudlow told me about, and other Robert Lighthizer told me. They was going to do a pipeline right across Europe. This is before any invasion of Ukraine, and everyone was saying Nord Stream 2 should go forward. And it was going to have us basically show up with all our natural gas from fracking, and we'll be the behemoth, the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, and we're going to do it. But believe it or not, well, you believe it, France stopped it because environmentalists said, I don't want a pipeline going through the Alps. And they quickly regretted it. The election happens. Trump's out of power. But now they got a deal. And this is just so interesting because most people thought that EU was going to retaliate immediately. But instead, they held their fire. The only ones to really come at us is Canada. And I think they feel pretty ridiculous now. They could be next, but I think India is going to be next. So this is pretty cool. And this is the story. I know people want to talk about Epstein and the Russian hoax, and I'm interested. Give okay. And then, you know, Joe Biden, the auto pen story. Sure. Okay. I'm bringing it up. But don't tell me it's not more important than this. Whether you're a small-time manufacturer, you're a big-time farmer, or a corporate investor, this matters. Cut to. Two.
So I just want to congratulate you. I think it's great that we made a deal today instead of playing games and maybe not making a deal at all. I think it's, I'm going to let you say, but I think it's the biggest deal ever made.
It probably is. And I think the president's good. You know, it's going to be framed out. So the UK prime minister told you that things have changed, flies in to Scotland, and he's meeting with the president. And they're talking about not only the trade deal that they did that set the template down, for and maybe put pressure on the EU. The UK was trying to get a free trade deal from the day Brexit happened. Obama says, if you do Brexit, you go to the back of the queue. That's English terms, back of the line. And when Trump wins, he's like, I'll do it. But he never was able to do it. He focused on China, and who can blame him? South Korean trade deal, USMCA. Never got around to it. So this time he did it first. And this is what the UK needs more than anything else, because they got to establish their own relationships now. So I'm loving it. And Alexander Stubb, one of the great guests Trey Gowdy had over the weekend, he's Finland's president. That's an impressive country, often listed as the happiest population on the planet. And they know about the Russian threat. Cut six.
Many Americans won't know this, but Nokia is a Finnish company, and most of the networks that you have in the United States are either Ericsson or Nokia. So basically the whole 5G system, and actually the conversation that we're having right now is probably over a Nokia network. We do a lot of quantum computing. We do a lot of defense industry. So we have many opportunities, and I'm quite glad that we have now seen a trade deal being pushed through between Europe and President Trump.
And one of the great things that happened in NATO was Finland and Sweden going in. So the other reason why the Prime Minister Starmer is here is to talk to the president about talking to Netanyahu to get more aid into Gaza. Keep in mind, and you always have to just regroup. I don't want to see one innocent person die, especially a kid. But the reason why hospitals are hit is because that's where Hamas is located. The reason why the fighting continues is because Hamas has rejected the last four ceasefire plans and opportunities because they don't know what to do because the people hate them. If they lose, most of them, the leadership is dead. The new generation is in, said, if we end this thing, in my view, I have no, you know, I'm dead the next day. So they're holding on to 20 live hostages, 23 live hostages, and about 50 bodies overall. And they're showing images and trying to pressure Israel to get more aid in. And they did. They're stopped fighting. They're going to get some more aid in. But keep in mind, Israel has put enough aid in there to feed the population for 5 years, 15 times. The aid is not going to the right people. And they're putting up all these pictures of starvation to fuel anti-Semitism in the world, make Israel seem like the bad guys. Remember, they did October 7th, not Israel. They're the ones who will not do a ceasefire. They're getting prisoners out for hostages, which is not even an even swap, by 10 to 1 margin, maybe even 100 to 1. And now there's this picture that's been sent out that looks horrific. It's been sent out all over social media. And it shows an 18-month-old just basically wasting away. And they're side by side, the black and white photograph, a Jewish child on the brink of death in one of Hitler's death campaigns, and then they show the Palestinian kid. Well, now the Free Press has gotten to the bottom of this. The boy in the picture, who appeared in the front page of the British Daily Express on Wednesday, the New York Times on Friday, the BBC, CNN, Sky News, and countless others, in fact suffers from a muscle disorder and other grave genetic conditions unrelated to starvation. According to CNN and the independent investigative journalist David Collier, but of course that information will never reach the countless people who saw and shared that. Evidently, you see the brother, Mohammed, this guy's name is Mohammed, brother, who is cropped out of the picture, widely circulated. Why? Because he looks healthy, as does his mother. So please, I'm not saying kids aren't suffering. I'm not saying innocent people haven't lost their lives in Gaza, but it's not the intention of anyone in the IDF, and certainly not the mission from the government and the military to hit at one innocent person. But the problem is these horrible people live amongst the population and are looking to sacrifice the Palestinian people. They don't care about them. So they want to put the pressure on the democracy, who once again has emerged as the behemoth of the Middle East. And a lot of people aren't happy about that. I personally think if they can stop this fighting, get some type of resolve in Gaza, you're going to see a whole bunch of deals going through. But in terms of a different approach, this is what we're hearing. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham, frustrated with the Hamas insincere, as was Steve Witkoff, same thing. Says they don't want a deal. So this is what Lindsey Graham says they're heading. Cut 34.
I think Israel's come to conclude that they can't achieve a goal of ending the war with Hamas that would be satisfactory to the safety of Israel. And if they're going to do in Gaza what we did in Tokyo and Berlin, take the place by force, then start over again, presenting a better future for the Palestinians, hopefully having the Arabs take over the West Bank and Gaza.
People didn't like that. What do you mean? You're going to go for total victory? They're not going to carpet bomb the place, but they feel as though they know exactly where the hostages are. I know they could be detonated and killed instantly, but by letting them waste away in tunnels while they have fruitless negotiations, that's got to change. 2.5 years, world pressure. Yeah, you got world pressure. So now they're going to be forced to go in. You know, Israel's government says they have lost 895 soldiers have been killed over the course of the war. On October 7, 2023, man, 2 years ago, 1,200 Israelis dead, nearly 250 have been taken hostage. That's what prompted all this. Why do people have a hard time understanding why this situation is the way it is? So the IDF said on Saturday they're prepared for humanitarian pauses in areas that are population concentration and will continue to operate against terrorists in other areas. I don't know who they're going for. They killed most of them. Hopefully somebody else emerges as a power. But for France to come out and recognize the Palestinian state or the Palestine as a state, where? Where is it? In the West Bank? In the Gaza? You're going to have that and a land bridge in Oslo in 1993. And they didn't want that then either. So when I come back, I know you have a lot to talk about. I think this Russia investigation is going to be very substantive to the point where even CNN has got to report it very shortly. But I'll talk about this, the historic deals, and others that could be coming. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show on a Monday. So glad you're here.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and there's a lot going on. We're still watching the Prime Minister and President Trump take questions, and the Prime Minister got a question about Scotland. The President had to deal with some protesters as he went around his course in Turnberry, some bagpipes. Doesn't care. It doesn't bother him. But I think the one thing that's simmering underneath is that they have let, Europe has let, their immigration system run wild. In the we know Germany paid the big price. Merkel's legacy is destroyed. Ireland is being overrun, and Scotland too, and the UK in London. They're basically, they call it London stand between Pakistan, Afghanis, and everyone they just let in. There's nothing wrong with getting foreign talent coming into your country, but just to take all these refugees in who don't want to be British, but just want to take their culture to another country because their country sucks. And Europe has got to wake up. Same thing with France. They got these huge Muslim enclaves where the French cops reportedly don't even go. So they have to, they do vote. And they have a million kids. So they're there not because France says, okay, we looked and screened you and you're the perfect one to make France a stronger France. They're allowing their population now, which is mostly Muslim, with the new immigrants are Muslim, they need their votes. So now they're fueling the anti-Israeli, anti-Semitism that's happening in that region. And I think it's part of the reason why Macron yesterday recognized a Palestinian state. Problem is, they don't recognize a Palestinian state. They want the whole thing. So there's a lot going on economically, a lot going on internationally. The President of the United States is perfectly comfortable with all this. And I think that I've never in my life seen such a transformation of a perception that I'm witnessing right now with Trump. In the beginning, they go, oh, he's different. Remember those guys? They caught him, I think it was in Britain. All the world leaders were sitting in a huddle. And I think it was Boris Johnson, who was supposedly friends with the president, guest on our show. He was mic'd up. And he was just talking about how this guy took so many questions. This guy goes on and on and on. And it just seemed like the cool guys club. Just ripping Trump. Now, I think it's sincere, but who knows? They all know that ship has sailed. America is fortified. We've come blasting out of the pandemic. Deficit's too big, but defense is getting strong again. We have a very bold president looking to assert himself. He's not enfeebled, and he is confident. And you could sit there and say, not my type of guy. He doesn't do things diplomatically right. Well, that's not the way America should do things. And then they said, we're dealing with him. We had him for 4 years. We got him for another four. Today, with the EU deal done and Japan done, the president's got Scott Bessent, his Treasury Secretary, in Stockholm, working to get closer to framing out a durable trade deal with China. I had Tom Cotton on Saturday, Sunday night, 10 o'clock on One Nation. And he wrote a book about how you just got to confront this they got to confront China in every way, with the fentanyl coming in, the military trying to take over the Pacific, dumping of rare earth. And the president, Wall Street Journal, first story, is in deal mode with China, from confrontation to deal mode. We're going to see what happens. But the good news is, this is not Trump doing a deal in year three, pandemic hits, doesn't really get a chance to fulfill phase one of the trade deal. This is Donald Trump, 3.5 years left to go. And if you think that he's going to sit back Like, past presidents in their last semester of the last term, forget it. And I think China knows it. So if they sign up for this deal, they're going to have to live up to this deal.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I have met with more than 20 different countries over the last 6 to 8 weeks. The administration is all hands on deck, meeting with numerous countries. In fact, over 70 countries have approached the United States to find a better trade agreement. The announcements that we've had with the United Kingdom, with Japan, with Indonesia, Vietnam, and then today with the European Union is quite amazing.
That is Jason Smith, very powerful guy, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. He's playing a big role with these trade deals, too, and they kind of choreograph and work out the frameworks, and then they do the deals. And, of course, the big deal was the EU over the weekend. Together with the U.S., we make up 44% of the world's economy. And the big meeting today in Stockholm with China, we thought it would be a perfect time to bring in the founder and CEO of the India Index and also a partner at the Vogel Group, Sameer Kapadia, with us. Sameer, welcome.
Brian, thanks so much for having me. And you're right. This is a big day for the president and the White House. They clearly know what they're doing. And if anything, we've seen here that these tariffs are corrective. They're not protective. And you just saw Europe fold, clearly today over this new announcement.
So, for people who don't know, it looks as though we're going to get our cars some access to the European market, possibly for the first time. There seems to be another big deposit into America's investment account. The one that Japan gave was over $600 billion, and this should be about $700 billion. They'll have an investment. Obviously, they could benefit from that, but it's going to help American industry. They have a 15% tariff across the board. What else is significant about this?
Well, I think you have to look, Brian, into the way that the president has thought strategically around these deals. You can't just look at the pattern, but look at the paperwork. It's interesting because the European Union now is committing to major purchases to the tune of $750 billion worth of U.S. natural gas products. And, you know, when you think about what that can do for U.S. industry, but more importantly, what it does to Europe's relationship with Russia, it begins to realign the geopolitical map in ways that many are really not talking about. This wasn't just an economic victory for the president and for the country. It was a geopolitical and national security one as well. And so around the world, you're seeing that, you know, whether it's even with Philippines or Indonesia, some might say, and this is the typical kind of Washington intellectual snobbery, which says, oh, well, those deals are so small, they're not going to make an impact. Well, guess what? The United States, from a national security perspective, has a lot of equities in the Indo-Pacific, and we want friends in the Indo-Pacific to contain adversaries like China. So once again, the president is thinking very strategically around how not just to maximize market access, but win friends as a way to contain our adversaries. It's genius.
So what I think people misconstrue, Bill, out of tradition, is that when you negotiate with someone, it doesn't mean you're in a fight. Hey, I'm not happy with this rate here. I'm not happy we can't get F-150s into Japan. Well, why are you talking to an ally like that? Well, that's what we got to change. Economics are economics. Dollars and cents are different. You know, we could be friends, but my goal is to make the country stronger. I don't need another friend. And I think that's people have a hard time understanding Trump's approach. It's not personal, but he'll do whatever he can to cut the best deal possible. But he's not doing it for the Trump organization. He's doing it for the country.
Totally, Brian. And look, I've been doing trade deals now for over a decade. I've been at the White House for the past few months working with folks, on these staffs on how they're framing these agreements. And from what I can tell, this is just the beginning in a tour to be unapologetic about American industrial capabilities. You know, for decades, American presidents would go around the world and almost be apologetic about the way that we look at our economic agenda. And what do? We let them export all their products into the United States and consume American economy. But then when we want to actually access their markets and maybe sell them agricultural products or, you know, defense platforms or oil and gas products, there's always this reluctance. There's always this wall. And so the president said, look, we're not going to do that anymore. If you're going to benefit from the United States economy and make billions of bucks off of the American consumers' wallets, then, hey, you're going to start buying some of our stuff. So it's totally rational. And finally, we have a president who's being very, you know, strategic and thoughtful about it. You know, this is it's so clear that this is working because all of these countries are blinking, you know, and I just saw this morning.
And no retaliation too, right, Samir?
No, none.
There has not been retaliation since April when it went out. I think Canada did something and they were alone.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And I think that the tonality of these negotiations are really, really well crafted. I mean, you have folks like Secretary Bessent and Secretary Luttmeck and Ambassador Greer. And, you know, I've met with all their teams over the past few weeks and months, and they've just been incredibly thoughtful and forthcoming in this agenda. And I think, you know, toughness works, right? Like, Brian, we saw this morning Secretary Luttmeck saying, hey, August 1st, tell you what, we're not going to pause on these tariffs. They're actually going to happen. And once again, this domino effect of announcement after announcement after announcement of saying, hey, by the way, you guys are right. We have been taking advantage of your market, and we're going to do something to sort of reconcile that inequity. And I think people are pretty happy about it. I mean, the funny thing I saw this morning as well is the French prime minister kind of coming out and saying, well, hey, I think, you know, European Union should probably rethink this. And, you know, this was we were submissive to the United States. Well, you know what? You're going to find these kind of singular kind of comments from heads of state when really they're just going to try to use that as leverage to get something else done down the road. But all in all, from everything we've seen, there seems to be some kind of equilibrium here that, frankly, our country hasn't seen in 50, 60, 70 years. It's really incredible.
Yeah, I think – do you think that India feels pressure to come across with some type of deal now? I mean, another huge country. And, of course, that conversation comes with why are you buying Russian oil?
Yeah, Brian, it's a big point, right? Because, look, India is a strategic ally of the United States. It's the largest democratic country in the world. Keep in mind, half of the population of India is under the age of 25. So what that means for the United States kind of corporate actor is, look, I don't just want to leverage India only as a supply chain partner. I kind of want to sell my products and services to the Indian economy for the next, you know, 20, 40, 50 years. So there's a lot of interest in saying, OK, where are we going to land this plane? From my conversations with folks within the National Security Council and others within the White House ecosystem, this is probably going to roll out in a kind of three different stages. There could be a what you call a phase one where they reconcile this reciprocal tariff issue. And then phase two, where they get into more what we call foreign direct investment, alignment on defense platforms. Mm-hmm. They might even get into the weeds on some of the ag stuff. And then phase three will be potentially a meeting with President Trump and Prime Minister Modi in India, which could happen in November, where they sign what we call a BTA, a bilateral trade agreement. So I think with India, there's going to be a cadence of negotiations. But I think just on the heels of, look, Japan, Indonesia, Philippines, Europe, Brian, I think it's going to be very hard for India not to come to the table and sign something quickly. I mean, look, the clock is ticking, right?
I agree. If you look right now at Fox polls out, and by the way, Prime Minister Starmer and the president are still meeting in they're still having an open press conference. This is probably about a half hour longer than Starmer's ever given one. But the president's not leaving. But one of the things he just said is the president says, I'm shortening the 50 days to 10 to 12 days for Vladimir Putin. because he's had it.
He goes,
I know where we're going to be in 50 days, so I'm not going to wait that long. But if you look at the Fox poll right now, what is the president's approval on the economy? 44%. On inflation, 36%. On tariffs, 36%. And what I say to people who are looking at it, just saying that, let's say that's accurate, is the president had, with that big, beautiful bill, that's his economic plan. With the tariff, this is his approach, restructuring trade. So he's made the tax cuts permanent. He told you where we're going to be economically. And now we have trade deal after trade deal. So we're reconfiguring trade. And we're going to our number one adversary in every way, China, today. We're working towards a deal by August 12th. This is the certainty in the markets. And I would tell the American voter, if I'm Trump, tell the American voter, this is my game plan. Watch. And if you don't like it, the results, don't vote for me. But I just watch. Don't be skewed. Don't let anyone tell you what to think. Tell me what you're feeling. And I'm pretty sure he feels as though if they're going to judge him by his programs, he's going to be okay in the midterms.
And Brian, I couldn't agree more with you. And I think if you look at the reasons why voters, you know, reelected the president, it's a really kind of a return to our identity as a country. You know, for decades, American presidents approached trade with a kind of, you know, almost like a self-loathing. I mean, you know, they treated our prosperity as a country as something we needed to apologize for, where we just allowed for all these products to come into the United States, and we kind of reshored all of our industrial capabilities in countries around the world, this kind of new global system. I mean, frankly, the United States basically gutted Detroit and our auto industry to the needs of others for decades, you know? And I think we've reversed that script where we're saying, look, this isn't just about commerce. It's about diplomacy. It's about respect. And that only happens with leverage. Right. No other president's done anything like this, Brian, because frankly, they didn't have the guts to say, hey, look, I'm going to reset this relationship. And here's what I'm going to do if you don't acquiesce to these terms, which are frankly pretty rational. And now you're seeing all of these countries fold like lawn chairs because they realize they've had it so good for so long. And you know, it's common sense. So you know, this is only going to continue, frankly. And for the average American, I mean, what are you going to see? Well, you're going to see your local factory hire more people. You're going to see more investment. And the foreign direct investment piece, I think, is genius, Brian, because it's not just about, hey, market access, I want to sell more to you. It's, by the way, you're going to invest in U.S. capabilities, which, frankly, I've never seen any president make that, you know, one of the legs of the stool when negotiating. Because it's not just about the ag exports. It's not just about the defense platforms and the oil and gas stuff. It's okay, you also have to lower your trade barriers so that we can export more to you. Oh, and then the third leg is you are going to invest in rebuilding, you know, the United States industrial capability. So that's going to create a lot of jobs and a lot of prosperity for Americans in the long term. And that's what we want as a country.
Yeah.
This whole short-termism thing where, hey, you know, I want to see this get settled in the next month or the next year or the next 5 years. The president's not only delivering on that, he's delivering on what could be the next 25 to 50 years of an American renaissance in industry. And frankly, we got to give him credit for that. It's incredible.
Absolutely. Plus the crypto situation. And, you know, he's setting up parameters in order to grow, as well as what he's doing with AI. Lastly, I know the president's got his trade team meeting in Stockholm with China. But Michael Pillsbury on Fox and Friends First this morning, who is very tapped into China and to this administration, says that China's coming to the table with something that somewhat was surprising to me. Cut 18.
I think the main thing is if he agrees to help us on China trade issues and not benefit from our refusal to sell high tech to China. We don't want the UK or any other high technology country in the world to step in and benefit from our sanctions. So a parallel approach, a joint approach to China is the best thing we can hope for out of this meeting with the prime minister this afternoon.
Yeah, that's not the part I wanted. I want the part. Michael Pillsbury went on to say that China is going to come with a ceasefire proposal for Russia to stop the fighting. Yep. So that's that's the part of the interview which just stunned me. They could do it in a second. They provide 90% of the components for these drones, the money, the buying the cheap oil. We're about to hit him with third-party sanctions. It would blow up all this trade progress we're making. And that's one thing that Vladimir Putin will listen to, don't you think?
Oh, totally, Brian. And you know, it comes back to that point where this isn't just around the economics. It isn't just around the reciprocity and the bargaining. It's this larger vision around geopolitical wins to say, look, we have adversaries and we need to be very open-eyed about them to get them to do the things that we want, which is to stop some of these challenges that we're seeing in various parts of the world, or whether it's to sort of act a certain way when it comes to abiding by U.S. regulatory regimes. We're saying, look, we're going to kind of corner these countries and get them to help us out in ways that they haven't done before. Look, I think it's, for those that say that the U.S.-China relationship is acrimonious, I think that's false. I mean, this is all angling towards a symbiosis. I think Secretary Bessent has done a terrific job in kind of managing and tempering that relationship. We're continuing to see announcement after announcement around the United States and China speaking, working collectively, having some sense of common sense around finding a way to work together. So I think that's only going to buoy markets. It's only going to buoy sentiment that this is going to have a softer landing. And if it, at the same rate, if it gets challenges that we're having with countries like Russia to ameliorate, that's even better. So once again, I think it's all trending in the right direction.
Yep. Sameer Kapadia, thanks so much for coming in. Coming on, the CEO of the Indy Index and also a partner over at the Vogel Group. An exciting time. We're going to find out. If this stuff works out, we're going to feel it in our pocketbooks. We're going to see it in the grocery store. Sameer, thank you.
Brian, appreciate it. Good seeing you. Talk soon.
Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I would have said five times we would have had a deal. I've spoken to President Putin a lot. I got along with him very well. But five times, and every time, four times maybe, but we've had discussions. You and I have had discussions. Yeah. We thought we had that settled numerous times. And then President Putin goes out and starts launching rockets into some city like Kiev and kills a lot of people in a nursing home or whatever. You have bodies lying all over the street. And I say, that's not the way to do it. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed in President Putin. Very disappointed in him. So we're going to have to look. And I'm going to reduce that 50 days that I gave him to a lesser number because I think I already know the answer what's going to happen.
Yeah, that is the perfect soundbite to pull. Because that is the biggest news to come out of this press conference so far with the UK Prime Minister. And it's going on for at least a half hour, maybe. No, excuse me, an hour. 1 hour. This is over an hour. Amazing. And I'm sure the Prime Minister thought he was just going to come visit and ask a few questions about Gaza. That's what he came for. And they're going on. But the Keir Starmer is playing ball. But that's the thing. Maybe it's going to be 10 to 12 days. So Vladimir Putin, from the minute the president said the 50 days, has picked up the pace in the drones. They've really not made much progress on the ground in Ukraine. And I'll play that in a different hour. On the ground, they have not taken, they 0.9% or something over the last year and a half. While they're having draft after draft with North Korean troops and Yemeni troops that they're pulling in, they're getting more firepower. All the artillery is coming from North Korea. The drone technology is coming from Iran. The actual electronics is coming from China. And their whole economy suffering because of it. So why Russia refused this off-ramp, I don't know. But my hope is the president does what he has to do within a week because the Ukrainians are in tremendous pain while we wait.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your direction. It's just so funny to see the President of the United States take questions for over an hour, and no world leaders do this. The President does it all the time. And I see Prime Minister Starmer. I could just see him talking to his staff, go, oh, my goodness, how long was that going to go on for? He flew into Turnberry to meet with the President of the United States. It's his golf club. And they talked about what's happening in Gaza and the massive need for some type of, they were doing airdrops with Jordan and trying to get some aid in there. And talking about the trade deal with the EU. This hour, we're going to talk to Michael Goodwin about this crazy mayor's race in Zohran Mamdani. 33-year-old assemblyman without any distinguishing accomplishments, took a break from winning the Democratic primary, went to Uganda for a multi-million dollar wedding guarded by basically the whole Uganda military. What is going on here? And then Mike Rogers at the bottom of the hour, he's running for the other Senate seat over in Michigan. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
The images are disturbing and heartbreaking. We all want a peace there in that region. President Trump is trying to forge that, and we support it 100%.
That is Speaker Johnson. Decision time in Gaza as innocents suffer. But let's be clear. Hamas is to blame. The world wants a resolve, but with talks broken off, the IDF has to go for complete victory. I'll explain.
Number two.
For a four-year period of time, the truth about the origins of the Russia collusion hoax was hidden from the American people. Those same people were already at that point in time onto their next hoax, the Hunter Biden laptop.
So that was John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, former DNI, former the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, too, in the House. Russia hoax rumbles forward with more revelations and intriguing posts from Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino. We're going to let you know what's new and why all the Obama intel team should be worried.
Number one.
We have a deal. We have a trade deal between the two largest economies in the world. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will bring stability.
Yep, that is the president of the European Commission, the biggest yet. Just days after pulling off a mammoth trade deal with Japan, the EU comes in with one bigger. As the worries on tariffs dissipates, should we anticipate more success when the Trump team meets with China in Stockholm? I imagine India is going to beat the August, I would hope, would be the August 1st deadline, too. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, a guy with a great perspective. And Mike, I'm going to get to your perspective on Mamdani, what it means. But I first want to talk about the trade deal that's cut, the prime minister meeting with the president now. And one of the things that emerged from it, Trump fumes at Putin. He's reducing the 50-day timeline to 10 or 12 more days because he goes, I think I know where this is heading. Your thoughts.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Look, I think the trade stuff is significant in so many ways, primarily for the American economy, and it means investments in our country. It means American companies are now able to sell into European markets without tariffs. I think so that we will collect a 15% tariff on European products, but there will be no tariffs on American products going the other way. I mean, that is an amazing deal, and the Europeans felt that they to take that deal shows you, I think, what she was saying yesterday. The President Trump, he's a good negotiator. I think we can all agree on that. The other aspect to this, Brian, is this is not just going to create jobs in America. It's also another reason for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates. Chairman Jerome Powell has often cited tariffs as an uncertain impact, having an uncertain impact on the cost of money and the pace of economic expansion. So when you resolve these big tariff issues with Japan and now Europe, that is an incentive for a rate cut to come sooner rather than later.
Right. So I guess we'll see what happens. I'll tell you, it looks like we got a good deal because they seem upset. I like the way the president's playing it, saying these guys ran a tough bargain. I think that's pretty cool. This is what the president of Finland said about it. Cut seven.
I just spoke to Commission President Ursula von der Leyen about the 15% tariff deal and the purchases of American energy and other goods. So I think this will stabilize the markets, and we, the Europeans and you, the Americans, can continue to work together, because if we put our two economies together, we're over 50% of the world economy. So let's just continue our alliance economically, politically, and militarily.
And now as they build up their military, they're going to buy from us, and then we'll get the maintenance contract. So that's got to make the president, I mean, this becomes a huge win between that, the big, beautiful law now, these trade deals coming in. This economy is going to be thoroughly Trump's economy, and then let the chips fall where they may. I think they're going to fall in a positive direction.
You know, Brian, it strikes me also that we are witnessing something we've never witnessed before from an American president on the global stage, doing these deals, interacting with these commissioners. I mean, we were reliably told by Joe Biden that everybody in Europe hates Donald Trump. I mean, oh, when I was elected, they were so happy to see me and said, oh, thank God America is back and all of that. I guess not. I guess this is the America. This is the America the world needs, is a president on the global stage making deals with our allies, because economic growth is a problem in Europe as well. They got so many government regulations, so many restrictions. This is a thing that will lift both of those economies. And so it is good for the free world. It's good for Western civilization and bad for those who want to do harm to Western civilization. So, and for a president to be on that stage in this frame of mind is something I don't believe we've ever seen. I mean, he has made tariffs and trade negotiations sort of a household word. Everybody can see what he's up to, what he's doing, what he's achieving. I think it's a remarkable performance.
I think he's showing great respect, not to the press, but to the American people, by saying exactly what he's doing, taking all these questions, letting you know his thought process. Well, he's definitive on just about every subject. So it's not like he's saying what I'm thinking about. No, he just says, this is what I'm doing. This is what I want. So I want the outcome to be. So now today in Stockholm, the president's going to have his team meeting with China, and they have an August 12th day to have a durable agreement. Here's Trump, cut 12.
And we're very close to a deal with China. We really sort of made a deal with China, but we'll see how that goes. And we have numerous other deals. And mostly I'm just going to charge tariffs. And, you know, it's not a deal per se, but people are going to pay tariffs. And we're doing them at the low end, not the high end, because we don't want to hurt anybody.
So he's optimistic something will come. It doesn't seem like they're on a situation where either side would be storming off. It seems more clinical, accountant-like now, as opposed to, I think they're building to some type of bigger thing when he comes to President Xi, theoretically, will be here in October for a big summit meeting.
Absolutely. I mean, we've come a long way since Liberation Day, right? April 2nd, when he began imposing all of these tariffs unilaterally, and the whole, you know, the stock market shook, and there was all this concern. So it was clearly a strategy. It was clearly he had a plan, and we're watching the plan being wrapped up one deal at a time, and these big deals really, really set the pattern, I think, for a lot of the smaller deals to come. But it's, again, Brian, the public nature of this. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's usually done behind closed doors with cryptic speeches and all of that, and nobody really knows what they're talking about until it's done, and then you move on. This is sort of government in the open, government out in the open. I think it's a real refreshing experience to be witnessing this, and I think it's also instructive for all of our citizens to think about our president out there making these deals on behalf of the country. I mean, it's quite something to see a president in action this way.
All right, so let's talk about what's happening. Zohran Mamdani was in Uganda, his home nation, in a multi-million-dollar wedding that lasted for 3 days, surrounded by the Ugandan military. Not bad for a New York assemblyman. Socialist, communist, Marxist, who wants to distribute wealth and ban billionaires. Michael, but you say no, all kidding aside, what Governor Shapiro did the other day is exactly what Hakeem Jeffries, Senator Schumer, Dan Goldman, every Nadler, every prominent Democrat should do. Forget about your party. Do what's right.
Yeah, the anti-Semitism, Brian, is so disgusting from Mamdani. And when you go through it, it's not just one incident or one thing. It's repeated. It's over and over and over. This globalized the intifada. He says it's not language I need use, but he describes it as a call for Palestinian rights. It is not that. It is actually a call to kill Jews everywhere. And he never acknowledges that only in Israel do the Palestinian, the Israeli Arabs have rights. Jews have no rights in many Arab and Muslim countries. There are few Jews in those countries. There are over 2 million Israeli Arabs in Israel with voting rights and things like that. So the idea that somehow Israel is a colonizing state, that they're stealing the Palestinians' land, I mean, it is such rubbish. And for the candidate who is the leading candidate to be the next mayor of New York, to be voicing these things, which are pure bigotry, the BDS, right, the boycott, divest program that he supports, and all of this language, all of it is disgraceful. And for Chuck Schumer, for, you know, as you mentioned, some of the members of Congress, where's Governor Hochul? Right?
Yeah,
where's Hakeem Jeffries?
Just so right and wrong.
Democratic leader of the Senate, the Democratic leader of the House, the Democratic governor, none of them have said a word about this. Now, they have not endorsed Mamdani, but they haven't also criticized him. And whether they like it or not, he, if he becomes mayor, will become a national face of the Democratic Party, which, as I note in my recent column, according to a Pew research poll, 7 in 10 Democrats now have unpleasant or negative feelings about Israel, as opposed to 37% of Republicans. So this is the party that's being recreated as an anti-Israel party right before our eyes.
No question.
And the New York leading Democrats.
But how do you think this plays out? How do you think this plays out? So Mamdani has got about an 8-point lead in over Cuomo, and then followed by, I think, Curtis is ahead of Eric Adams. If all four stay in, Mamdani wins, doesn't he?
That's right, yeah. And, I mean, at one point, Mayor Adams, the incumbent, was running behind the undecideds. The anti-Mamdani candidates, they have to coalesce behind one. Cuomo has offered to do it in mid-September, that he would throw his support, if he's not leading, he would throw his support to the one. I mean, Mamdani, at this stage, you don't need a majority. It's a plurality is enough to win the general election. So with really three viable opponents, Cuomo, Mayor Adams, and Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, effectively splitting the anti-Mamdani vote as it stands now, he will get, let's say, 40% could easily be enough to win. So they've got to, I think, make real headway against him individually and as a group. And then at some point, they do need to coalesce around one candidate. He is the most dangerous candidate in the race.
And for the Democratic Party, as Hakeem Jeffries evidently said, he denies it, that if he wins that mayor race, we cannot win back the House. And I agree, but I don't want to, as of somebody who works in New York every day, I don't want to sacrifice.
You're right.
That.
I don't want to make that trade.
Yeah. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian.
You
thank
got
you.
It. All right. And we are following a lot of the breaking news along with the news to get a perspective on. I do want to tell you why you should care about what's going on with this Russia investigation and why it's so alarming and informing and informative. I think you should pay attention to that. And the president took a couple of questions about Epstein. It clearly has him angry. This is a totally manufactured thing. There's going to be nothing at the end of the rainbow. I guarantee it. We'll discuss that. I'll take your calls. No matter where you stand, I want to hear your perspective. 1-866-408-7669.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He's very good at knowing your condition, your worries, your insecurities, but he's really good at the moment. I mean, he's out there watching television and keeping up. And is this the right thing to do? What am I going to do right now? Biden couldn't do that in a million years. Not in a million years. Biden, Mondale couldn't do that. They don't have the connection to the electricity of what's going on in the country culturally. And he knows what works.
So that was Chris Matthews, of all people. I thought that was significant because I've never heard him say anything positive about Trump. But he has a perspective on powerful politicians. He worked for Tip O'Neill for years, and he's been an observer for years. And now I think that sitting back, being, you know, pretty much exiled out, he's had a chance to analyze. And that was him talking to Charlie Rose, who was also in the middle of an exile. Blake in Oklahoma. Hey, Blake.
Thank you.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, I just had a question about the Epstein thing. I just wanted to know how it's totally manufactured whenever there's somebody in prison for sex trafficking minor children.
It's manufactured as a major story now. Not that it's made up that Jeffrey Epstein was a pedophile and had an island, but this is not something that only – this only reason it's in the headlines is Elon Musk put it out there, and Democrats have an opportunity to make the most of it. Perhaps they didn't handle the PR element of it, but there's nothing new there. The victims want to come out and they want to get retribution and some type of money. They deserve it. Absolutely. Find it. Get it from his estate. But there's nothing there. And the people on that list, some of them, like Bobby Kennedy, got a ride with his daughter to Utah for an environmental cause. Jeffrey Epstein says, I'm going to go with you. We're going to check this out. Is Bobby Kennedy guilty? That's what the president was worried about. And the fact that he was friendly with Epstein, the same people that were friendly with Bill Cosby when he thought he was normal, and O.J. Simpson before he was a double murderer. You can't fault them. They did not know that side of him. And they had not spoken in 8 years. Out of everything going on, this has nothing to do with the headlines. I don't get it. And that whole MAGA side has lost their mind. Dennis in Salisbury, Vermont. Dennis.
Brian, good morning. Why did progressive Ugandan-born Mandami travel to Uganda and omit mention that same-sex marriages can't happen there? In fact, the same gender sex acts are punishable by life sentences over there under recent Ugandan law, which has solid popular support there.
Good point.
And how does the media not mention this? If Trump went to a wedding in Uganda,
absolutely.
Do you think they'd mention it?
A three-day wedding, multi-million-dollar wedding with the Marxist who wants to ban billionaires. Well, what billionaire financed that wedding as he comes back? This guy better not win. That's all I can tell you. New York City, please step up. I'm not allowed to vote here. I just have to pay taxes here. Mike Rogers is next.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Before the intelligence community assessment that DNI Gabbard was talking about, and before Devin Nunes' report about that intelligence community assessment, before the Mueller investigation, before Crossfire Hurricane, there was this. In the summer of 2016, U.S. intelligence intercepted Russian intelligence talking about a Hillary Clinton plan, to falsely accuse Donald Trump of Russia collusion, to vilify him and smear him with what would become known infamously as the Steele dossier.
So do you understand how significant this is? One thing, do you have to know John Ratcliffe? He's not a sensationalist. You don't become DNI and then go to CIA and sit there and go, I'm going to be a flamethrower. I think he's very logical. Also, he's got his own reputation. There's no pressure on him to come up with some Russia hoax. to dismantle the Russia hoax. He's saying that Russia picked up on intelligence that Hillary Clinton was going to blame them to colluding with Donald Trump to win an election. And do you know that Russia was plotting and planning, was certain that Hillary was going to win? And that they planned on putting out that she had all these psychological problems and drugs and was on tranquilizers. Did anyone ever bring that up? No. Some of this was an annex to the Durham report, as if they didn't know where to put it. So the Federalist writes this: senior intelligence officials strenuously fought the demands of former FBI Director James Comey and other Obama intelligence chiefs to include in this intelligence assessment the false and unverified Steele dossier, an official assessment based solely on what we do now, know now. When pressed, guess what? They said, we have no proof of this. You know what John Brennan says? But doesn't it sound right? Do you believe this? So Dan Bongino put out on a cryptic message on social media on X. He said he was shocked to his core. And what he has learned about, he didn't tell us what, but I have since learned it's about Russia, that it changed him forever. And we're going to find out these details in the next few months. A guy that spent his life as intelligence, served in the military, was in the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and of course with the FBI, is the former GOP congressman who's a Senate candidate in Michigan, Mike Rogers. Mike, I'm very cognizant of people being worn out about something that happened in 2016, but people aren't understanding there is new stuff here.
Oh, absolutely. And if it's true, and why we need to drill this thing down until you get all the facts, is that the intelligence services plotted with misinformation to go after a political figure in the United States, take out all the personalities of it, to go after a political figure in the United States, and had a high degree of success, including even influencing what we know now as the FISA court, where they misrepresented a filing to the FISA court. That in and of itself is a crime, by the way. And so you start going through all of this and you think this is dangerous. And why people need to be fired up about it is not because of the politics of it. But listen, if they can do that to someone who was the former president of the United States, was the president at that point, or going to be the president at that point, imagine what they can do to you. And so that's what bothers me most of all about this, is that all of them kind of succumb to this, the Comey kind of trance about pulling all this together, including other intelligencers. That whole letter of the 51 intelligence officers, that was all nonsense, too. Matter of fact, the first email that they had sent out apparently had the language of, hey, listen, Biden needs a talking point in a debate.
Yeah.
They signed a document for a talking point, using their positions of authority and access to rise to question that, it must be true. Look, there's 51 of them. That's what's so dangerous about this. If you want to talk about politicization of the government and weaponization, man, that is it. And that's why I think, yes, you're right, it's tiring. I mean, we never have gotten to the bottom of it.
Right. And I think that Hillary Clinton, the fact that it's proven that she had to pay a fine because she paid for the dossier that actually was the anti-Trump information that led not only to stop him from winning the election, but then stopped him for 2.5 years. I could say this, and it was pointed out by a listener that wrote me. And he said, do you realize that something did happen? Yeah, Trump kept his job, but he got crushed in the midterms. And he lost the House. And then we had this situation with nonstop impeachment investigations on him, because 2.5 years was spent trying to stiff arm this Russia hoax. And can you imagine, he wasn't able to be judged on what he did. He was being judged on winning an illegitimate election. Remember, Donald Trump knows he didn't legitimately win the elections. He's an illegitimate president. That was the push. And that was used as a hammer against him in the midterms.
Oh, completely. Oh, Brian, and again, that's why we need to know the truth in this. Because, again, if all of the instruments of power of government when you use it to target an innocent citizen, and yes, in this case, it happens to be Donald Trump, and I know that, you know, people love him, people don't like him, but whatever, take the personality out of it. That could happen to anyone. And if the government can do it there, they can do it at any time. And you're right. It ruined the first couple of years of his presidency. It you know, cast this huge shadow, two impeachments into this thing. And it set the narrative that, you know, this is a terrible, terrible guy because he did all these really bad things with the Russians. Turned out none of it was true. And well, so that to me is what was so dangerous about this.
And the thing is, too, Mike Rogers, is that we're going to get more. This isn't like, look at this. This is like, you're not going to believe what's going to hit you, that maybe even CNN will have to cover it. But you have good news. You almost won that Senate seat, lost by a little. Yeah, we were very grateful. You showed a lot of grace in saying, OK, good fought race. But then this seat opened up and you have gotten the endorsement of President Trump. And on Truth Social, you said, I'm grateful to have President Trump's complete and total endorsement. He knows that we have what it takes to win this seat and deliver real results for hardworking families. That means a lot, right?
Oh, it does. It means a ton. It really does. And that'll help us with the primary. You know, one of the things that happened to us last time, Brian, we had a primary up till August 8th of the election year. And, you know, that only gives you, you know, you come out of that a little bruised, a little battered, and a little broke. And so we had to try to make up for all of that in just a very short period of time. Meantime, the Democrat, my opponent, was just raising money and running around and didn't have all these problems. And so this allows us to not have those problems. This clears the primary out. We lost any real opponent that we might have had last week. And we're marching down the road, building our team, building our ground game, and getting people fired up to come out and do something great for Michigan. You know, 32 years, we really haven't had a voice in this Michigan Senate. Two people think the same, talk the same, vote the same. This at least gives Michigan a voice at the table, and I get to walk into the Oval Office and say, here's what Michigan needs, Mr. President. Need your help on this. Well, that's going to be the big difference.
So how do you – things are going to be different now. We see what happened with what's going on in Gaza, and you see they're putting out these pictures of these starving kids, one of which at least is a total fake. That's, but the Free Press just exposed it. But you have to win a lot of the Muslim votes. So what's your message now in that community?
So and I do go to the Muslim community quite a bit, going there again, I think, next week. I talk about things that are important to their family and their lives here. They're very entrepreneurial. Their businesses in regulation and taxes and all of the oppression of Democrat regimes mean something to them. The education, you know, even the fact that we're talking about having biological males compete against their daughters or in their locker rooms in public schools is brings them to their senses about what a conservative Republican Party can do for them and their families and their communities. They're big into public safety. We have that opportunity. Yeah, they have a kind of a saying in and around Dearborn, better to be stabbed in the heart than stabbed in the back. They believe that the Democrats would breeze into town, say, we're with you, we're with you, we're with you, and then do something different on Israel when things got hard. They know where I'm at on Israel. I don't do that. I look them in the eye and say, here's why I'm pro-Israel, and here's how I think we can help. After the Gaza situation calms down, how can we help? And I think America needs to help there, those folks, and kind of get things back in order to provide a lasting peace there. And those are the conversations we have with the Muslim community, and they're responding very, very well. I mean, the business Muslim community, very, very engaged. And they're engaged with us, and they're engaging with our campaign in a way we just haven't seen before.
So I want to get your take on what happens next, because these next few days, week, is going to be crucial. They gave up on Hamas. Steve Witkoff said, I'm basically giving up on talks. They have no interest in coming to a resolution on the 20 living hostages they have and the rest of the bodies that they killed. It's horrendous. But they might have a plan B, and the plan B is for complete victory. Listen to what Senator Lindsey Graham said. Cut 34.
I think Israel's come to conclude that they can't achieve a goal of ending the war with Hamas that would be satisfactory to the safety of Israel. And if they're going to do in Gaza what we did in Tokyo and Berlin, take the place by force, then start over again, presenting a better future for the Palestinians, hopefully having the Arabs take over the West Bank and Gaza.
So, I mean, people are freaking out of that. They go, is that you going to go for total carpet bombing annihilation? No, but they don't feel as though they can negotiate, and they might have to make military moves to get those hostages. So, you know, you're in the military. You have the FBI background. You also have seen the biggest and best intelligence when you're in the House. So your thoughts about Senator Graham?
Well, listen, it was probably very light on details, and details are going to matter in what that looks like. If they're saying you have to continue to attack the infrastructure of Hamas, no matter what level people think it is or is not in shape to perform activities, I mean, clearly they're still able to attack and kill Israel soldiers. They're doing that. And so I would argue going after the hostages has to be still the number one thing that they do. And that, you know, that's going to mean some military engagement in Gaza. They have to give up. You know, they could stop. Hamas could stop this tomorrow with a ceasefire if they gave up the hostages. But they don't, and they won't, and they're not going.
That is never brought up.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, what is your job if you're the Israeli prime minister, is to get your people safe and home, even the remains. You leave no one behind. These were terrorist acts of atrocity that dragged those people out of their homes after they, you know, did atrocious things to their families in front of them, dragged them into the tunnels, and they're still there. And so I argue they have to continue to wear down Hamas. You know, and listen, does it mean that they need to find a way to make sure those kids aren't starving? Yeah, I think they can do both. It's tricky, but they need to do that. And then continue to kind of find and dismantle Hamas until every single one of those hostages is brought home. And they don't even talk. Nobody talks about it. And by the, you know, you can't allow a terrorist group to do that and get away with it.
I hear you. Lastly, on Epstein, what did you know about that in the House? What kind of priority was it then when you were there? And why do you think it's a priority now? Because I want you to hear what Speaker Johnson said. He's getting pressure to have this massive investigation on an issue that really was something that was Jeffrey Epstein was hung himself in 2019, for goodness sakes. Cut 38.
Let me be absolutely clear, as we have been from the very beginning. House Republicans insist upon the release of all credible evidence and information related to Epstein in any way. But we are also insisting upon the protection of innocent victims. And our concern is that the Massey and Khanna discharge petition is reckless in the way that it is drafted and presented.
So you got, you know, Tom Massey, obviously a heretic Republican, doesn't want to vote on anything. So he's using this as an opportunity, like Adam Kinzinger, to go after Trump. Your thoughts on how we get out of this? Because I don't see any reason that we're spending all this time on it. But how do you handle it right now if you're Trump?
Yeah, and first of all, this all happened after I left.
Oh, it did? Okay. And,
yeah, so I my last full year was 2014. So if you notice, I was chairman of 2014. None of all of this happened after I left. I think I would have I did run that place like with an iron fist to make sure it worked on behalf of the American people, not against them. So listen, this is what I would do. I would find the way that you can release this information, have a small working group put together to do this. I do believe you have to protect victims. You also have to protect somebody who got on an airplane and rode with them, didn't go to, was not a participant in any other activities other than, you know, they may have had business, you know, legitimate business reason. You can't put that person out there. That the court of public opinion would ruin their life for no reason. And so that's what you have to be careful of. But the things that they have that happen around the island and all of that, to me, that ought to be released. But I would be cautious how you do it. And I don't think a big ugly vote on the House floor was the right way to do that. You do have to protect not only the victims, but the innocent people who get sucked up. So their name is on a report somewhere. It doesn't mean they did one thing wrong in the raw files. You don't want to hurt that person's career or reputation or family either. And so that's the way you have to do it. You can't do it in a big sloppy way. And listen, people who just want to be after Trump are just going to beat this drum all day long. And because they don't have anything else,
they really don't.
Can't help them. So, you know,
I mean,
they don't.
Trump is hitting them so quick with so much. They instead of going after policies, they're just trying to get a scandal. Good luck with that. If this was the victims out there speaking, saying they want their day, I get it. Then I get it. But this is somebody started with Elon Musk, perhaps, with his post, and now all of a sudden things gone crazy. Mike Rogers, do you want to get back into that craziness? So he wants to be the next senator from Michigan. Mike Rogers, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brian. But listen, the reason you do this is for the future of the country. If we don't get the next decade right, we are going to be in real trouble to be able to hand America to our kids and our grandkids to have the same opportunity we did. To me, that's worth going through all of this to be a part of that solution, not a problem.
You look at this as service, and I appreciate that. Mike Rogers, thank you.
Thanks.
Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at FoxTrueCrime.com. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I like to think that people come to a comedy show to kind of get away from the things, you know, the pressures of life, whatever it might be. And I love political humor, don't get me wrong, but it's just what happens is people wind up cozying too much to one side or the other. Why shoot for just half an audience all the time? You know, why not try to get the whole? I mean, I like to bring people into the big picture. I don't understand why you would alienate one particular group.
Either do I, ever. And we've talked about that endlessly. That was Jay Leno. And Jay Leno sat down with, who was he sitting down with? It was like a nobody. Because we've been trying to get him. And he sat down, he says, you know, we're talking about Stephen Colbert. 176 Democrat, liberal Democrats on as guests. One Republican over the last 5 years. Are you kidding me? I mean, what kind of show is that? That's fine for MSNBC, maybe even for CNN. But it wouldn't even, that 176 Republicans on Fox wouldn't work. That doesn't work. I mean, every day we break that. But that's why he's off the air. And yesterday they had a protest. They had a demonstration in support of Stephen Colbert. A lot of cops there. You know how many people showed up? 20. Embarrassing.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Man, do we have a lot to talk about now. John Reed will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. John Reed's a Republican candidate for Virginia, lieutenant governor. Used to be on our great WRBA, the station that we're lucky enough to be carried on right in Richmond, Virginia. He did mornings there for a while. So he's going to be joining us, giving us an update because Democrats are desperate to get back that governor's mansion and the lieutenant governor spot. Winsome Sears is running right now against Spamberger, over who prides herself on being a moderate, she says. But let's see if that record can be exposed. Jason Chaffetz is in studio, Fox News contributor, former Utah congressman. Jason, and by the way, you got a great podcast, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast, and author of the new book, They're Coming For You, How Deep State Spies, NGOs, and Woke Corporations Plan to Push You Out of the Economy. Jason, first off, the president spoke, you were on set, I think, for over an hour. One of my takeaways was, and there's a lot, when he said about Russia, we're not waiting 50 days. It's going to be 10 to 12 days. I know where this is going. He is fed up with Vladimir Putin.
He's fed up with Putin. And I think he said, yeah, it could happen anytime. We're just going to do it because there's no chance of any change. He's just been strung along. I think Putin has told the president time and time again that he would do this, do that, but it hasn't happened. And so I think the president's right. He's got the backing, I think, of the UK and a whole lot of others, that, and it's the morally right thing to do.
Right. And I think in Ukraine, it's going to be interesting today because the Chinese are meeting with the U.S. trade team in Stockholm, Sweden, at which time Mike Pillsbury, as you know, is connected to China like nobody else. And the president's got his, certainly has his respect, has said that China will come with a ceasefire proposal to this meeting, which I find astounding because they could stop this thing in a second. 90% of all the drones come from them, the money, the buying of oil to sustain their economy. And if China says stop it, Russia has to say, okay.
Yeah, I think they are.
Do you think this is possible?
Look, I think the idea that the United States enter into this trade agreement with the UK gives us even that much more of a leverage point. Donald Trump is clearly the commander in chief and the leader of the free world. And I do think that's is all tied together. I think it puts more pressure on China
to do a deal,
to do a deal. And part of that deal would be helpful to put an end to the war with Russia and Ukraine. I think it's three dimensional chess. And I think the president is playing it brilliantly.
I think so, too. And I love the fact that the French hate the EU deal and they want to blow it up, but they can't. One of 27 countries, part of the EU, why the UK left. They want to make their own deal, who, by the way, was the first to do a deal. I look for India to be next. That's my prediction before August 1st. Economy's too big. They're seeing too much happen.
Right.
And they can't say the president's not going to do it because we know he's going to follow through. Howard Lutnick weighed in on something else that matters to me, the TikTok ban. And he finally said what we all know, Cup 14.
I mean, the president really likes TikTok, and he said it over and over again because, you know, it was a good way to communicate with young people. But let's face it, you can't have the Chinese have an app on 100 million American phones. That is just not okay. So it's got to move to American ownership. It's got to move to American technology, American algorithms. And if the president can get that done, and, you know, I don't know if they'll be discussing it or not. I'll leave that, as I said, I'll leave that to Secretary Bessent and President Trump to decide how he wants to play it for this meeting on Monday. But I know the president is positive towards TikTok if it can move into American hands.
Right, if it moves to American hands. But if not, you got to ban it. And the president's got to realize that because it is a spy tool and a manipulative tool. I love that the Commerce Secretary said that out loud.
Yeah, that was a very realistic assessment of the situation. Interestingly, though, do you remember the app Vine? Vine was a precursor to TikTok and was awesome, but it was acquired by Twitter. Then they shut it down, but now it's in the hands of Elon Musk. And if you look at what Elon's been tweeting in the last couple of days, he's putting out polls. Hey, should I bring out Vine? Should I bring it back? Kind of almost foreshadowing that Vine under X would be launched, which is a serious competitor to TikTok.
Yeah, it was a blink of an eye. It was out there, and then it was just gone, right?
Yeah, it was great app. It was a great app. I think everybody started using it. But then it got killed by these
acquisitions.
Because
Twitter didn't want the competition.
That's right.
Which should not be allowed. A couple other things. A lot of people, I hold what I said on Sunday. I thoroughly agree. The Biden auto pen, important. The Russia hoax, absolutely. Epstein files, yeah, let me know what happens. But these are not the three most important things in our country. I mean, what's happening with the EU right now, getting a resolve in Gaza right now, talking about the trade deals domestically at home, the big, beautiful bill that's happening, getting those confirmations completed from Michael Waltz on down before they leave for vacation this week. To me, that's the stuff that's going to affect the American people. But when it comes to the Russia hoax, what people should understand is there is new stuff out there, correct?
There is. There's stuff that's been there. It's just never had the light of day.
The annex to the Durham report?
Yes. Look, the foreshadowing by John Ratcliffe. He's the director of the CIA. He's the former DNI, director of national intelligence. He was on the intelligence committee when I served with him in the House. He was a former prosecutor, a U.S. attorney prosecuting terrorism cases. The guy knows his stuff. So when he goes on Mornings with Marie or Sunday Morning Futures and starts to say there's more information coming and goes almost to the edge and saying there's probably going to be some people prosecuted here believe him.
Here it is. Cut 20.
This intelligence was so explosive that John Brennan briefed President Obama, Vice President Biden, Jim Clapper, James Comey, the entire national security team, telling him about this Hillary Clinton plan again. But think about this, Maria. That was in August of 2016. And yet it wasn't until more than 4 years later, in October of 2020, when I found, after an exhaustive search, John Brennan's handwritten notes and the underlying intelligence behind it that revealed exactly what happened.
And here's what he said. Cut 19.
Before the intelligence community assessment that DNI Gabbard was talking about, and before Devin Nunes' report about that intelligence community assessment, Before the Mueller investigation, before Crossfire Hurricane, there was this. In the summer of 2016, U.S. intelligence intercepted Russian intelligence talking about a Hillary Clinton plan, to falsely accuse Donald Trump of Russia collusion, to vilify him and smear him with what would become known infamously as the Steele dossier.
So this, now wrap your head around this. The Russians pick up intelligence about Hillary about to wrongly accuse Russia of working with Trump, poisoning relations with a adversary further, and trying to just destroy Donald Trump's candidacy.
Well, it's pretty scary, first of all, how good the Russian intelligence is, particularly on Hillary Clinton. And you can see...
Because they already hacked her emails at this point.
Yeah, look, we can get into those vulnerabilities. I think where this is going, and it's just a guess, are these FISA warrants. Because it was the precursor of the Steele dossier that was used to justify warrants to spy on Donald Trump and those around him. So if you, and it says verified on the top of these FISA warrants, you have to verify this. That's why it goes to the FBI, the Department of Justice, Clapper, Brennan. And that's the allegation. And if they did certify to the courts that this stuff had been verified when they knowingly or should have knowingly knew that that was not true, that's where I think there's the legal vulnerability for these people.
Here's more from Ratcliffe. Cut 21.
For a four-year period of time, the truth about the origins of the Russia collusion hoax was hidden from the American people. And unfortunately, Maria, as you recall, those same people were already at that point in time onto their next hoax, the Hunter Biden laptop. This was a month before the 2020 election. And unfortunately, what we saw with Joe Biden's election was another 4 years to be able to continue to bury the truth.
Yeah. Then nobody expected in 2016 for Donald Trump to actually win. That's where they were just, whoops. And that's where...
How did the game plan change? Then destroy him as president.
Yeah, destroy
him. Make him illegitimate.
That's right. And they did. And they were very effective at it because the next thing you know, you had the Mueller. And then that paralyzed the Trump administration for years to have to try to deal with that.
You know, it's Trump knew it. The minute Sessions steps aside.
Yeah.
Think about this. Because as a member of the Intelligence Committee, you met with the Russian ambassador. Are you nuts? Yeah, he was the first senator who endorsed Trump. But you should just stood up for it. Of course I'm going to meet with him. Screw you. Now instead he goes, okay, I'll give it up. Robert Mueller, special counsel. Let's see what happens. Next 2.5 years. It was brought up to me, too, is that they did pay a price for that at the midterms.
Oh, yeah.
So it looked like the president. Were you in Congress at the time?
I had left right in the middle of 2017.
Well, wasn't that part of it?
But the problem was, you're right, with Sessions, because he was the attorney general for the first 6 months of the Trump administration. And when I would go to meet with him to try to get the documents legitimately regarding Hillary Clinton, her IT specialist, I said, I'm not touching Clinton's. I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. Why not? Because it's the Clintons. Like, literally, they had that stranglehold over him, and he would not cough it up. That's why I think he was one of the worst attorney generals in the history. And Donald Trump has said as much as well.
So here's what Jonathan Turley said from the legal perspective. Cut 23.
It was earlier in 2016 that John Brennan briefed President Obama to say that Hillary Clinton was planning to hit Trump with a Russian collusion conspiracy theory. So he knew that. So did Obama. And then at the end of the term, right before Trump comes in, they rushed this new assessment, which essentially flipped the earlier assessment and seeded the basis for the Russian investigation. And it worked. But now you've great, great vulnerability for people like Brennan. What we learned last week does not seem to conform with what he said to Congress. Mm-hmm. And that's going to raise serious issues if he's called back before Congress, and they're going to ask him the same questions.
So the House Intelligence Committee compiled these egregious errors, one of the errors says that included burying intelligence that the Kremlin was preparing for a possible victory by Hillary Clinton, according to the DNI, Tulsi Gabbard. When confronted about the intelligence in the dossier failing to meet basic tradecraft standards by another intelligence agency, Brennan is quoted as saying in the report, yes, but doesn't it ring true? Can you imagine the fate of a president? Doesn't it ring true? Who trained this guy?
Well, look, everybody thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win. They thought they were doing her favors. And it just so shows how they put the interest of politics far above the interest of the nation. You got to call balls and strikes in those positions. That is not what they did. But for John Ratcliffe, the director of the CIA, to say, hey, we found handwritten notes by these people, that finally was unearthed. Look out. And that should come out later this week.
So Congressman Jason Crow, Democrat, on with Shannon Bream, said this, cut 24.
The allegations and the conspiracy theories by Tulsi Gabbard would be sad if they weren't so dangerous. She has turned herself into basically a weapon of mass distraction, is what I've been calling it, because it's very clear what's happening here. She's trying to curry favor and get back into favor with Donald Trump and has concocted these theories to do so.
The problem is that Tulsi Gabbard comes with receipts. She comes with documents. She comes with that credibility. And if he doesn't have any intellectual curiosity as to what really went on, then step aside. Let other people do this investigation.
But you know, I put that in there because Democrats are immediately going to say just that. Come on, guys. 2016. Everything's out. You did an investigation. Nothing to see here. The Obama's out of office.
My emails. That's what Hillary Clinton will keep saying. It'll keep coming back time again. Oh, that's nothing new. You know, all the same tropes that they usually try to pull out. They're already starting that drumbeat. But now, look, Donald Trump, or Pam Bondi, a lot is on her shoulders on a lot of these things, particularly this. Are they going to actually prosecute somebody? And these are as serious a charges as it gets.
I just want to hear Lindsey Graham, because on Meet the Press, he was trying to tell Kristen Welker that this is new. She could not get this concept.
Right.
And at the end, he let it go. He should never have let it go. But listen, cut 31.
What I am saying is that you left a lot out here. It's called the Horowitz Report. It's the Mueller investigation was crooked and rotten to the core. The Washington Post and the New York Times got a Pulitzer Prize for reporting on Trump's campaign's relationship with Russia. It was all BS. At the time, I didn't know any of that. At the time, I didn't know that they were manufacturing evidence to get FISA warrants. There was a confirmation bias. Durham didn't say there was no political bias. He said quite the opposite. He said every time a FISA warrant was sought in the Mueller world, they got it, and the errors made to get warrants in this space were a lot greater than they were in anything not involving Trump. But what I'm saying is that this is new evidence.
So previously they played clips of him back in 2016 saying, okay, the investigation's done and Russia manipulated our elections. He's trying to tell her this is new. Well, what were you thinking there? Well, this is new. She wasn't getting it.
Well, she didn't want to get it. That's the problem. I mean, look, the media was so complicit. Like, I watched that press conference where Tulsi Gabbard at the White House goes out in front of the, like, a lot of the questions had nothing to do. You had the director of national intelligence making accusations about Barack Obama himself, about his personal involvement in this. And they didn't have the intellectual curiosity to ask a question. Are you kidding me? But they look, they're going to have to lay this out. So much of it is new. It is coming out. And what Director Ratcliffe is talking about, whoa, that is so serious.
I have heard in pretty good sources that within 2 months, it's going to be so substantial that even CNN will have to run it unless they just want to go off the air.
Well,
maybe they do.
I don't know. Is anybody going to be watching to know if they go off the air?
Right, that's true. What about the networks like ABC and whatever? That maybe I would like to see them run. They're going to just see that. I think it's going to be Hillary Clinton behind it, right? And she could be, you could see what's going on. And I will say this.
It's not just the $10 million. It's going to be a question because that goes to the $10 million. You've got Mark Elias and that group. Then you've got Fusion GPS. You've got the right. Nelly Orr and Bruce right. Orr. That's going to be further exposed.
Jason Chaffetz, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. You know, over the weekend, Jay Leno spoke up about Stephen Colbert. And I want you to hear what Jay Leno said about Stephen Colbert and where he could have went wrong.
I like to think that people come to a comedy show to kind of get away from the things, you know, the pressures of life, wherever it might be. And I love political humor, don't get me wrong, but it's just what happens is people wind up cozying too much to one side or the other. Why shoot for just half an audience all the time? You know, why not try to get the whole? I mean, I like to bring people into the big picture. I don't understand why you would alienate one particular group.
And that is Jay Leno, now 75 years old, talking to the CEO of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation during why Stephen Colbert would have in the Media Research Center actually did a survey. 171 guests over the last 5 years, Democrats, one Republican. And it was probably Adam Kinzinger, who just hates all Republicans now anyway. So why would you do that? And you wonder why you're off. And what they said about Stephen Colbert is that he has no advertisers. Well, I thought it would be the other way. If you do all Republicans, it's hard to get advertisers. Maybe that's old school, because we got all ours back. They're just interesting. I just think people, they go to blame and to be a martyr when they should really look in the mirror, or their producer should look in the mirror. I also think it's important to bring up that they had a rally for Stephen Colbert over the weekend. 20 people showed up.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So John Reed was a successful morning show host in WRVA. We're lucky enough to be following him on a daily basis. And now he's the Republican candidate for Virginia Lieutenant Governor. It's a tough race, a Republican in Virginia, but they were able to pull up a big upset 4 years ago. What about this time? John Reed, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. You're right. It's a tough race, but I think in Virginia, which is, you know, pretty split, we know that July and August is tough for us, and that's why I'm putting in the work. You know, I'm calling you right now right outside of Roanoke, and I've put thousands and thousands of miles on the car trying to talk to people in person, and I think that's going to pay off in the end.
How did you find out your years in politics and as a talk show host prepared you for this?
Well, the ability to talk about issues and actually connect with people is important, but I've been doing a lot of sit-down sessions with people who are experts on issues that, you know, are facing the Commonwealth. I just did a phone call with a guy to talk about energy issues because I'm going to do a podcast with folks. It's the Appalachian Podcast, and they are hot about how the bills have gone up so high, and I think they want me to have some answers. So I'm trying to, you know, get a hold of the experts and be ready to at least talk about some of the options that are out there. But they're Republican options. You know, the Democrats, it's tax and spend, and they talk a lot about how they care about working people. But I'm not seeing them do anything to lower anybody's bills. In fact, the private sector or when it comes to taxes.
How is the Trump first 6 months helped or hurt your quest to win over the people of Virginia?
Well, it's tough up in Northern Virginia. You know, the Doge cuts have gotten a lot of people very concerned. And I always want to be empathetic. If somebody's lost their job, it's terrible. I've lost my job 2 times, had to cash out my 401k. You know, you're never going to hear me mock or laugh at somebody about that. I remind people that we're almost $37 trillion in debt and some tough decisions have to be made. But this is why you need a resilient private sector economy all over every state in America, but especially in Virginia. You can't just be dependent on one industry, and that includes, you know, the federal government, which actually isn't generating anything. It's just sucking money away from taxpayers. And my prayer is, and I think we're beginning to see the signs of this. I was listening to you earlier on Fox this morning. I think we're seeing the signs that the tough decisions that Donald Trump is making are actually going to pay off as we head towards the fourth quarter of this year. And that's good for those of us who are running as Republicans.
I mean, we're going to see the results. We're not going to wait for a gradual passage of his economic plan. It all got passed at once. We're not going to look at a gradual trade deal. The USMCA took, what, 3 years? We're looking at 7 or 8 or 9, and then we're probably going to get 4 more before off to August 1st. And what does it mean? It means that all this stuff is going to be out there. People are going to be saying this is, and they're going to answer this question themselves. There's nothing you can do about it, John. They're going to say, is my life getting better now? Is the economy starting to prime? Is my relative able to get a job after college? Or are they able to get a job that's going to pay off their student loan that they graduated? So these things are, people are going to say, well, I'm loving what's going on, or this is not working out for me. So that you guys are the bellwether for the midterms, don't you think?
I think so. And the other thing is, if President Trump is successful at talking everybody into an interest rate drop of any kind, I think that's going to ignite the economic engine of the country. And that's good for Virginia. And that's good for Republican politicians who were running. But, you know, Glenn Youngkin has done a great job being a very upstanding conservative governor. He stopped 200 bad Democrat ideas from becoming bad laws in Virginia. I think he's also been conciliatory where he can with people who disagree with him. I like that attitude. That's something else that I'm talking about. You know, I got strong opinions, and I don't have any problem arguing with people, but I'd like to find common ground where possible so that we all, you know, have a prosperous, happy future. And I think Virginians are looking for that kind of optimism going forward.
But you're in a state that's purple or bluish, right? So does that change your opinions on things because you're elected but to represent the majority of the people?
Well, no, it doesn't change my opinion on things. It means I got to work harder to explain things to folks, like right to work. You know, I have to get out and explain why that would be so devastating to Virginia and our ability to bring new businesses to the state. I mean, and I also tell people, do you want to be forced into a union? You know, if you left New Jersey, if you left New York, if you left a lot of the states where you don't have right to work, do you want to be forced back into a union when you came to Virginia? And the answer pretty unanimously is no, I don't like to be forced to do anything. And when I explain the consequences of that for the robust economy that we want, you see the light bulb go off in people's heads. And I do think, like my opponent, who's, I mean, I hear you guys regularly, she's like the female version of Mom Donnie in New York. I mean, she is really extreme. She's proud to be the progressive standard bearer for the Democrats of Virginia. I'm so glad they chose her, because I think when people actually see her votes and her proposals, you know, boys competing against girls in high school sports, the tax increases, keeping the schools closed during COVID, they're going to say, heck no, we don't need that kind of leadership. And I think when you contrast me with her, I seem pretty reasonable and responsible and fair.
So our guest is John Reed. He wants to be the next lieutenant governor of Virginia. John, the president out of nowhere, and not out of nowhere because he's helping me on Long Island and the rest of the country by going to bat for Native American names like Chiefs. You don't go after Kansas City, but you can go after a high school. Warriors, all of a sudden that's not politically correct. Braves, well, if you're an NBA team, it's no problem. But if you're a high school, I guess it's insulting this invisible American Indian community, many of which are being paid off, it seems, by these left-wing groups. I want you to hear, I did not know this, but the former governor of Virginia, who was senator from Virginia, George Allen, talked about how his dad got the American Indian label on the insignia, remove the R, and put in the Indian head. Listen, cut 51.
Now, the way that logo got changed is that Chief Wetzel, who was president of the National Congress of American Indians, came to my father and said, we don't like this R on the helmet. My father responded to him, well, what would you like? Make some suggestions. So Wetzel, the chief of leader of the Blackfeet tribe in Montana, went back, counseled with other tribes, his own tribe, came back with two different suggestions. And the one that they adopted was one of a former Blackfeet tribe or nation chief, John Two Guns White Calf.
So did you know all that?
Oh, yeah. You know, I worked for George Allen. This was a question that was coming up constantly when he was in the Senate, and he explained it. He's really sensitive and, you know, talks to the leaders of the current tribes in Virginia on a regular basis. I think he still probably does, even though he's not in the Senate now. You know, you want to be sensitive to different groups, but I think this is a huge distraction. It's just like the Taliban-esque destruction that we saw in Virginia in 2020. And we were kind of ground zero for that, ripping down statues, covering artwork, moving things even out of cemeteries. You know, the Democrats promised they wouldn't move statues out of cemeteries, and then they lied, of course, and they did just that. And I think that erasure attitude is insulting to people from the past. It's insulting to the intelligence of modern Virginians, modern Americans, who I think are smart enough to adjudicate for themselves the good guys and the bad guys, and also understand that this is a different era than 100 years ago. So I'm fighting to keep these things in place, especially when it comes to history, so that future generations can make their own judgment, not erase them. And I've always thought that whole Redskins versus Commanders thing was a big distraction and was kind of foolish.
So what would you like to see happen?
Well, I agree with Trump. I think there's a tradition that's a pretty strong tradition from the fans who love the name Redskins. And I have been talking, as you can imagine, to Native Americans in Virginia, hoping that they'll support my campaign. And I've asked that question. And the ones, I mean, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but the ones that I have talked to have said that they liked it. So I'm sure there's somebody out there who doesn't. That's, you know, I'm not trying to dump on them, but I just think this is that was a big overreaction at a period of time where culturally we were purging anything that offended anybody, and we were kind of kowtowing to the left, and I'm not interested in doing that anymore.
And you had the whole Redskin front office involved in a scandal with the old owner added to it. So, John, what is your relationship with Winsome Sears, who's in that position that you want now and wants to be the next governor?
Yeah, you know, she's great. She used to come on my radio program every month for 3.5 years, and we've got a good relationship. Look, we don't agree on everything, and I've been in politics or around it my whole life. You know, you're not getting married when you get on a ticket together with somebody. There are going to be places where you disagree. The question is, do you agree on most things? Are you prepared to go forward for the benefit of Virginians together? And on that, Winsome and I are in lockstep. We know that conservative principles deliver economically and culturally for people a lot better than the kind of crazy leftist nut job stuff that the Democrats are pushing now. I'm proud to stand on stage with Jason Miaris and with Winsome, and I think when people listen to us, we're going to do really well and sweep again this fall.
All right, John Reed, if people want to help you out, where do they go?
No, thank you for asking, because, boy, the Democrats are trying to buy this, man. They just gave $1 million to the lady who's running against me. So it's johnreedforvirginia.com. R-E-I-D is my last name, all spelled out, johnreedforvirginia.com. I could sure use the help because it's an uphill battle financially.
John Reed, best of luck, John. Thank you so much.
You're awesome. Thanks, Brian.
All right, listen, that is John Reed, wants to be the next lieutenant governor of Virginia, and that's a national contest, even though it's in the state. You're going to look at New Jersey, you're going to look at Virginia, and both sides are going to learn from the success of these campaigns and obviously who won and what didn't work, and then the next year is the midterms. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So, everyone's still obsessed from 2 weeks ago with the Coldplay concert when they spotted the couple that obviously seemed to be having an affair. They both had their careers derailed, if not ruined, because of it. And people are obsessed with this story when Chris Martin went on the kids cam and they basically realized they were in front of the whole stadium or the arena, and they ducked down, which made them look guilty. and the follow-up has been worldwide. So the Astronomer is the name of the company where the C was the CEO of, and she was in human resources. So there's been another, Chris Martin obviously was married to Gwyneth Paltrow. So do you want to take it from here, Allison?
Sure. So Gwyneth Paltrow has now done this viral video to sort of explain what the company of Astronomer is. An interesting point, though, too, you know who put it all together? The ad agency? Maximum Effort Productions, which is the company that Ryan Reynolds is behind.
So, wow. Okay.
So talk about a deal. But let's hear, we can hear the little video.
Thank you for your interest in Astronomer. Hi, I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. I've been hired on a very temporary basis to speak on behalf of the 300-plus employees at Astronomer. Astronomer has gotten a lot of questions over the last few days, and they wanted me to answer the most common ones. Yes, Astronomer is the best place to run Apache Airflow, unifying the experience of running data, ML, and AI pipelines at scale. We've been thrilled so many people have a newfound interest in data workflow automation. As for the other questions we've received, yes, there is still room available at our Beyond Analytics event in September. We will now be returning to what we do best, delivering game-changing results for our customers. Thank you for your interest in Astronomer.
So, pretty funny.
It's funny, but it's also brilliant taking this really negative thing that happened and spinning it so the company's now getting all this free publicity, even though, I mean...
And now everybody's running it in cheap. How much do you think they paid her?
I'm not sure. And I also, I mean, with... I wonder whose idea, like, right, Ryan Reynolds is behind that company. Let's get Gwyneth Paltrow. We'll get it to go viral between Gwyneth, the Astronomer thing, and Ryan Reynolds behind it. I don't know. They probably paid her a good amount at the same time. She probably had fun getting in on the publicity, right?
Right. I remember she did a conscious uncoupling.
Yes, with
Chris Martin.
Yep.
And now the ultimate insult when she says, oh, I look at him like a brother. Oh. I mean, I'm sure maybe he feels the same way because she does seem like she could wear on you after a while. And there was a whole story, the whole story about her, the goop.
I mean, the company has done very well, but yeah, it's also a little eccentric.
Yeah. Couple of things. Just a quick announcement. I'll talk about this and so much more in Dallas, Texas, coming up on August 23rd. We're getting close to selling at the whole bottom floor. Windspear Opera House. Will Cain's going to be out there too. We're going to have Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is going to be with us. It's going to be a great show, History, Liberty, and Laughs. And then in Richmond, Virginia, we just were talking, John Reed, the Dominion Energy Center, Carpenter Theater. That'll be September 27th. It comes up quicker than you think. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. VIP opportunities remain. So it's going to be a fun show, and especially as we come up on year 250, get a chance to talk about my 7 history books and 2 sports books. We bring history to life in a fun, entertaining way. The other thing I wanted to talk about is how things are changing on the perception of Trump. And I do bring up Trump in the show. And Chris Matthews, who has obviously worked for Tip O'Neill, he's assumed to be center left. And then he got involved in some type of scandal. It's hard to know. They all blend together. But he sat down with Charlie Rose. And I was stunned to hear the deference. I know this is going to happen when Trump's done. 3 or 4 years after, you're going to hear political people talking about him as, instead of the crazy guy that's going to ruin the country and the ultra-right winger or whatever they want to say, they're going to start saying that he taught us how many things, much like they changed the way they perceived Reagan once he left office. But Chris Matthews is already doing it. Listen.
He's very good at knowing your condition, your worries, your insecurities, but he's really good at the moment. I mean, he's out there watching television and keeping up and is this the right thing to do? What am I going to do right now? Biden couldn't do that in a million years. Not in a million years. Biden Mondale couldn't do that. They don't have the connection to the electricity of what's going on in the country culturally. And he knows what works.
I mean, do we have another soundbite on this? But it was essentially what basically he said. He treated him like a normal, as a Democrat, which he really is. He's treating him like a normal politician. He's already getting a sense of, instead of saying, how did this guy become president? Now they're saying, okay, he got it. He's getting all these things passed. He sees the speed in which he's doing it. Now the fun he's having while doing it, outside the Epstein thing, I think is driving him crazy because it's such a non-issue. Outside the victims, it's all about housewives-type controversy without substance for the political dialogue. The substance is the court case and the crimes, but not how it relates to who's in the Oval Office. But for him to give him that type of deference, I think is significant. And also, you hear other world leaders. Listen to Alexander Stubb, the president of Finland. Cut 7.
I just spoke to Commission President Ursula von der Leyen about the 15% tariff deal and the purchases of American energy and other goods. So I think this will stabilize the markets, and we, the Europeans, and you, the Americans, can continue to work together. Because if we put our two economies together, we're over 50% of the world economy. So let's just continue our alliance economically, politically, and militarily.
He's getting respect from our allies, and he's sitting down with our enemies today. And he's got his team doing it. He's extremely confident in doing it. I think America knows they're getting built up again. China's built off America's collapse. We're not collapsing, kids. And even Democrats have to admit that. That's why they can't get their footing. Brian Kilmeade Show. See you on Fox and Friends.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.